What up, what up, what up? This is my first podcast. I had to do this. I had to wait for somebody just crazy. Everybody been asking me when I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
I had to wait for the right time. This is the right time. Jay Prince is in the building.
Oh, yeah.
You used to hear that on all the Ghetto Boy album intros. James Smith, Jay Prince, businessman, record executive. How would you describe yourself?
I'm just an entrepreneur, you know what I mean? I figured out how to diversify my portfolio and do it all.
A long time ago, too.
Yeah.
A long time ago. It was so long ago that a lot of people that, like, for us in our community, we really don't know our history.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Everybody's looking at Jazz Prince. He found Drake online, and you hear him talk about his dad. This is his dad. And like I told him earlier on the radio, I can remember us being – in Houston, he was like, get in the car with me. I got to go pick my son up. That was in, 91? In 1991. James Prince is really a pioneer and sold a lot of records, sold a lot of hay, made a lot of money boxing.
Yeah.
What else?
Oh, man.
Selling cars, nightclub.
Yeah. I done it all, you know what I mean? I done it all even before I made it to the music game. So it's been a beautiful journey.
I can tell you, though, probably one of the most memorable and probably most important parts of that journey was being able to go back to Fifth Ward and rebuild a community center.
Yeah, most definitely. You know what I mean? All of my life when I was a kid, I wanted to have access to a boxing gym in Fifth Ward, and there wasn't one there. So the first opportunity I got, I went in my hood, built a recreation center, which consists of a full court basketball facility, a boxing gym, you know, with a weight room in there, computers, you know, all types of educational computers and different things. Just a way to give back to my community, my hood.
Now, back in the beginning of the independent days, you had Luke, you had Eazy-E, and you had James Prince, because most of the artists up north, they were all signed to major labels.
Right.
How did the whole, I know a little bit of the story, but how did the whole birth of Rap-A-Lot come about?
Well, the whole birth of it came about through my brother, Sir Rap-A-Lot. I started the company for him because he was a rapper. I didn't want him in the streets. And eventually, you know, he got himself 20-some years, so I had to represent for the other two that was there. I gave them my word I would support them. So I moved along with them and created an empire.
Created an empire. Now, when I moved to Houston in 1990, that was before like the big days of Mind Playing Tricks and all that. We had like to get a grip on another level, read these Nikes, another level, which had the big sample in it.
Yeah.
That caused a big commotion. Whatever happened with the deal for the sample for that song?
Man, I had to pay for that dearly.
The Gangster Love.
Yeah, even the Mind Playing Tricks was a sample that they told me I couldn't use. You know what I mean? And I told them I got to use this. And I used it, and I'm glad I made that decision, because if I hadn't used that sample on Mind Playing Tricks, imagine how it would have turned out.
Wow, I was there for that. That was crazy. Yeah. And actually, Mind Playing Tricks was, the original version of Mind Playing Tricks actually was a Scarface solo record.
Exactly. Exactly, you're right. This man got a memory like an elephant, you know what I mean? That's why I love interviewing with him. I don't have to do much talking because he know everything. Tell him about that clean van truck you had. You had the cleanest truck in Houston.
Hey, I just bought the Benz version too.
Is that right?
I just bought the Benz version. Yeah. Actually, he's talking about the Street Machine. I bought it. It was in Atlanta,
man.
In like 95, 96,
the man
97.
Man had a mean Street Machine. I'm talking about
the Chevy Astro, the one that Bree rapped about.
Oh, man. Clean.
Did
man.
I change the game with that?
Man, I almost wanted that for me.
Did I change the game? DJs had their own promotional vans. And you know why I bought it? Because I wasn't making a lot of money at Magic, so if you lived in Houston, if you lived in the city, you had to pay a lot of money. So I lived out off of 290 in 1960. So I was doing a lot of stuff in the community like I do now here.
Yeah.
So, but we had station vehicles that we could actually drive. Mm-hmm. So to keep from having to come all the way to the radio station to get a truck to go all the way back out, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to get my own promotional vehicle.
Yeah.
And like Rap-A-Lot and other labels would give me their music to hand out. Source Magazine would give me the Source magazines to give out, because Source Magazine was actually born during that time.
That's true. That's true. That was a smart move. I didn't know that was the move.
That was the reason why.
Yeah, I didn't know that, but I salute you. That was a smart move.
James Prince, James Smith, J. Prince in the building. Now, after the independent music, and then you did the Priority deal. How did the Priority deal come about? Because you, before Master P was at Priority, James Prince and Eazy-E was at Priority. But if you watch Eazy-E's documentary, you can see that his business was kind of messed up with Jerry and everybody who was involved. But when Jay went in, he had his own, he was his boss.
Yeah, what had happened was I had done a deal with Rick Rubin.
Right.
Over there at Deaf America. And, you know, Geffen Records pulled up out of our deal. You remember they refused to put out a song, and they had all kinds of heavy metal groups that they were putting out with the same
Deaf content. America, they refused to put out the Ghetto Boys.
Exactly. So after that happened, we done one record with Rick Rubin, and I had done that deal with Rick Rubin to have access to Geffen Machine. So after that one record was over, I told Rick I need to move on, you know what I mean? And Rick, you know, stopped answering my calls. And eventually I made a bleep out of Rick and he released me. And that's when I went over Free Man to Priority.
And how did the Priority deal go? Just tell me a little bit about the beginning of the dealings to create the Priority situation with Rap-A-Lot.
Well, I mean, it was a deal that consisted of, at the time, I had about six or seven groups. It was strictly a distribution deal. We handled all our promotion and marketing at the time. And really, it was a deal I ended up having to change. In my book, you may learn something too, Street. In my book, some things I had to do because my partner at the time, Cliff, I remember Cliff.
I was about to say Cliff.
Yeah, Cliff had went and negotiated a lot of deals that I eventually had to change.
Remix.
Yeah, remix. I like that. I put a remix on them, and everything was beautiful after the remix.
The records came, the Convicts, Ex-Cons Getting Funky, the Ghetto Boys came with the We Can't Be Stopped. I can remember all the commotion when the record first dropped. Bushy Bill and his girl got into it. The Face became the album cover. Reddy Red didn't really believe in the group no more, so his face turned colors on the album cover. His face was a different cover on the album cover.
Boy, that's the truth.
He quit the group like 6 months before the record came out.
Oh, man. I'm glad somebody telling the truth.
The biggest mistake ever.
Yeah.
DJ Reddy Red.
Well, I'm glad somebody telling the truth. You know, Red been on the thing telling a lot of lies about
what?
I kicked him out or something like that. Tell him straight.
He quit the group.
Tell him like it is,
he
man.
He quit the group. And then the Convicts were so crazy. Rest in peace, 3-2. Big Mike at 3-2 was crazy. Then Big Mike actually got on one of the Ghetto Boys album. Was it Death Doors Part?
Think so, yeah.
The Notes, No Glory? Crazy.
Yeah.
James Prince in the building. What else are we going to talk about? Let's talk about the ranch. He has a ranch right outside of Houston that's bigger than Stone Mountain Park.
I got to go to Stone Mountain Park. I've never been there.
I think Stone Mountain is like 900 and some acres, or almost 1,000. I think your ranch is actually probably about 10 or 20 acres bigger. I did the research.
Yeah, well, I got them beat.
If you have a ranch that big, most people will just have just to flex, you know, go fishing, bring their boys out there, have parties. Let everybody know what you figured out what to do with this ranch years ago.
Yeah, my ranch is a business. You know what I mean? I deal with Black Angus cattle, Santa Petruda cattle, and I say, hey. And then my number one client is the racehorse track. You know what I mean? They come by that hay. You know, back in the day, I thought I had to sell weed to make money off of grass. But hay sell better than weed.
Wow, cutting grass making money too right now. I had a lawnmower.
Me too.
A snapper.
Yeah, I started out that way.
The ranch is crazy. Now, fast forward, another big investment. Like I tell you, the guy's a businessman from the heart, not just from just trial and error. It's a little trial and error, but just the spirit. He has that entrepreneurial spirit. He has his own islands in Belize.
True story.
Now, can people visit the islands and book the islands and live it, go stay at the islands? Well, is it just private use?
Not yet. My goal is to build a resort. You know, I have like 3 or 4 villas on the property right now. One of them just mainland is 6 acres and one of them 3 acres. But the ultimate goal is to create a business, use it when I want to, make money off it when I'm not there. That's the goal. And I'm real close to completing it.
That's crazy. Now the book. How did the book deal come about? What was the science and the whole thing about this book? The book is The Art and Science of Respect.
Yeah, so that's the name of the book, The Art and Science of Respect. And, you know, there is an art and a science to respect. And I wanted an opportunity to share, you know, with the world the art and science of respect and share with them, you know, my wins, my losses, and everything in between, you know, because I started with nothing and I figured out how to turn nothing into something. And, you know, a lot of people always ask me, how did I do this? You know, how did you do that? How did you get this respect? In my book, I was able to share, you know, my wisdom, my knowledge, my understanding, you know, even my spiritual insight, you know, because I'm a praying man.
He in church every Sunday. Every Sunday morning, he's in service.
Tell him, Street.
What's the name of the church in Fifth Ward?
Pleasant Grove.
Pleasant Grove. Every Sunday morning, he's in service.
No, it was a true story. That's why they wrote that like that. But I'm not there every Sunday anymore, but my heart is there.
If you're at home, you there.
Yeah, Bedside Baptist. You know what I mean? Bedside Baptist some of the time. And sometimes I listen to Reverend Pillow. But, you know, I got it now.
You got to understand it.
Yeah, I got it. I got the whole mission. If I never go again, I know it's in my heart. But it's good to fertilize your brain and hear, you know, because more is caught than taught.
Give me like one thing in the book that's going to make people like, look, I got to go get this book. I must stop what I'm doing this weekend on my lunch break after work, before work. I got to go get this book.
Okay, well, here's one of many of these things in the book, How to Go and Get Some Millions. You know what I mean? I think everybody would be inspired to learn how to go and get some millions. You know what I mean? I left a blueprint in this book. I blazed a trail on a lot of these things that's taking place right now, and I shared, you know, my visions, my thoughts, and my heart in this book. So that's one of the things. And to those that's in bondage, you know, one of the things that always jump out at me in this book is the biggest deal I ever made. I got a chapter that's called The Biggest Deal I Ever Made, and that was a transition that I made from corporate America, no, from the streets to corporate America. You know what I mean? It was a time that I was in the streets and I had to make that transition, and if I hadn't made that transition, then I wouldn't be able to sit here and have this conversation with you right now. So I want to inspire those that's in bondage, because, you know, it's a lot of people that come from where we came from that, you know what I mean, didn't transform soon enough. So they need this, you know what I mean? They look up to me this way, and when they see, you know what I mean, and learn about my story, they may not want my glory.
And the moral of the story is this. Don't wait to go to prison to learn how to read.
Yeah.
I talk about that in my We Need to Read program. Like, a lot of people don't understand that in our community, we drop our kids off at basketball, football, track, all this other stuff, but we never inspire them to read about the things that they love and the things that they want to be.
Right.
Like, kids go all through their childhood life being told that they're going to be something, mm-hmm. and they've never read about it. Yeah. And it's so simple to just start picking up books and reading 30 minutes, an hour a day about the things that you like and the things you got a passion for, and they turn into careers.
Hey, man, reading is a powerful thing. You know, I read this book. In my book, I explained reading this book, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And what the book done for me, I had all these different gifts that I was unaware of. And reading this book exposed all of my gifts that I was unaware of, and then it taught me how to prioritize them. You know what I mean? What it meant to write down goals and how to attack the goals and different things. So a lot of us have a lot of wisdom inside of us and don't know how to use the power that we possess. And reading, you know, is a tool to teach you how to do that. And I left a lot of those lessons in this book. You know, it's nothing like looking into a mirror and seeing yourself and be like, wow, I got these, I can do this. You know what I mean? So
it's easy.
That's the power of reading.
It's easy. I'm going to tell you a story. Jake Prince I won't call him a car collector, an automobile collector. In 1990-91, when My Mind Playing Tricks came out, the first concert the Ghetto Boys did was at the Palladium with Captain Jack and Big Steve. Jay Prince pulled up in the red Ferrari. He don't know this. He don't remember this. But watching him and Face had all the Bentleys. They had all the Benzes. I actually went to Jay Prince and told him, and I know he going to say he forgot this, but, and this is the reason why you never get upset with people when they don't see your vision, because if they would have believed Jesus was the Son of God, they wouldn't have put him on the cross. But in 1991, I told Jay Prince, let's do a car show.
I remember that.
He didn't get it.
Yeah, I remember that.
That idea, yeah. I took it to Robert Scorpio,
yeah,
and it became the car show for Houston, and yeah, I brought it to Atlanta. I brought it to Dallas, and I brought it to Atlanta. But how many cars do you have now?
Oh, man, it's probably about 20-something.
Yeah, 20-something. Yeah. Tell them the story about going to Vegas to the fight, and the man pulls up in the 57 Chevy convertible, and what did you tell him?
Oh, yeah, it was that was a Thunderbird. Was it a Corvette? That was a 60 Corvette. That was a 60 Corvette at the Mike Tyson fight under the MGM. And I asked him, I said, man, you want to sell me this car? Because I had been looking for one. He said, no, I don't want to sell this, sir. I just got it. And I said, I'll offer you. He said, okay. You can
How much you giving for it?
I don't remember.
You don't remember?
Nah. I when made I my cars, offer, he couldn't refuse.
When I say cars, I'm talking cars. You never seen Ferrari limousine.
Yeah, true story.
All the Bentleys.
Yeah,
true all story. The Benzes. You had another limousine that was crazy. You had the Hummer limousine before anybody.
Hummer convertible.
A Hummer convertible limousine.
You know what? I came down to Atlanta, and I think the Super Bowl, and bought like 3 or 4 limousines and rolled back. You know what I mean? We came down here like 75 deep, and I bought like 4 or 5 limos. I forgot the homie name who had all these limos, but we just rolled back in a caravan of limousines.
Man, we could talk for hours about this stuff. But just like, this the homie, man. Look, I bought you some. I know you don't have this no more. You remember that?
Boy, boy, boy. Yeah, very well.
Play with your mama.
Play with your mama. That's Willie D.
Willie D. I wanted to like decorate the room with all the different stuff, the plaques and everything, but it came to me so late. But it's a lot of history at Rap-A-Lot. A lot of records sold, a lot of history, a lot of good memories, a lot of big things. And just to watch this guy do what he did, like you said, and evolve and just take that knowledge and put it in different places. How did the boxing transition come?
Oh, the boxing transition came because boxing was always my first love anyway. So after the feds had got at me, you know, they had got at me real tough, right, in Houston, I diversified, you know what I mean, my portfolio, and I popped up in their living rooms on HBO with Floyd Mayweather. I had to let them know I wasn't one-dimensional, and just because they stopped one situation for taking place, then bam.
But you had fighters too before Floyd.
Yeah, maybe one or two.
It was somebody that was kind of hot.
Maybe James Page.
Yep.
Yeah, James Page. Boy, you got a memory like an elephant, man.
Where Chief at, man?
Chief hanging. Yeah, Chief hanging, still on the line of duty.
Tell Chief I still got his
arm. Oh, man. Boy, look at here. Yeah, dog. Boy, now this is a throwback right here.
The St. Ives Rap-A-Lot. That's Big Chief's jacket. He took it off and gave it to me at the club.
Wow.
Take it, Street. You can have it. I still got the cassette too with the commercial on it. You remember the commercial Face did?
Man, this is a throwback history. Oh, man. Look here, Steve. What is man here for? Look here. SA Foods. Well, Street got some. You know these things worth money now, Street.
Well, hey, don't talk me to death. I don't have a Corvette downstairs, but listen.
Yeah,
James,
man.
Prince, man.
Oh, good.
James Smith.
Yeah.
Man, we so proud of you, man. We're proud of Jazz, too, man, just to see Jazz and the boys doing their thing.
Yeah.
Jazz is working, too, with Block Boy, right? Is he still working with Block Boy?
I hadn't heard about that.
Oh, he snuck in one.
Maybe
the guns probably snuck one in on you.
Yeah, that might be under the radar. That might be under the radar.
Don't y'all be disrespectful, boys.
Yeah.
You got to break bread.
Yeah.
But
for sure, you know, Lil Jape, you know what I mean? My youngest son got this rap a lot, New Wave and the YBN and all of that. You know, we partners.
Lamir.
Yeah. Lamir, Almighty J.
Almighty J going crazy right now. He going stupid. There's another one, too. What's the other one?
Yeah, I forgot his name. What's his name?
What's his name, Guns?
Yeah.
Oh, Guns not here.
Yeah.
It's another one.
Cardi.
Yeah, Cardi.
That's him. He bad, too.
He's bad?
Yeah, he's a lyricist. Yeah, he's a lyricist.
Rap-A-Lot Records. What's the boxing company called?
Prince. Prince Box. Yeah, Prince Management.
The Ranch.
Yeah.
The Islands. All that. The Art and Science of Respect. We know you talked about, you've been talking to the media about the whole thing with Drake and Pusha T.
Yeah.
Shutting that down. Or just making them understand. Like,
right. Yeah. That's three. I can keep going, huh? Yeah. I wanted to make them understand that, Street, because what we're dealing with is when you cross the line where music is concerned, then, you know what I mean, somebody with some sense have to come in the loop and stop a feud that's going to turn into, you know, a killing or something before it take place. You know what I mean?
And so, destroying each other's career.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? So it's like a double-edged sword. And I've seen enough of this take place, you know what I mean, to step out before, you know, we'd be looking at the end of it and be like, why nobody ain't said nothing? Why nobody ain't done nothing? So on my watch, you know what I mean, I put it to rest, you know, because we're not about a moment, we're about a movement. And we're moving along.
And we're going to end it like this. We got to stop trying to discredit or stop trying to talk about people once they make it. Have you ever noticed that those are only the people we talk about?
Oh, yeah. No,
we only try to find a flaw. Nobody's perfect. Nobody's perfect. You can find fault. You can find a flaw in anybody. Because you're successful does not make you perfect.
That's true. I don't know a perfect man on earth.
James Prince.
One love.